Welcome, everyone. We'll probably kick off now. So thanks for coming along to this session. My name's Philip Everett. I'm the chair for this session. Our presenter today, Peter Sinkus, on my right here. Peter and I have known each other for a long time, so I can give the formal introduction or the slightly informal one. So Peter is an actuary who's worked in banking for a number of years. He currently works in deposits, where he does a lot of work around analytics. They're doing some work around some elasticity analysis and some quite complicated information which will help them price the book better. Peter's previously worked in treasury, in liquidity management and capital management, and he spent a few years over in the US in NAB's Great Western Bank operation, where he worked in treasury and did all sorts of interesting things. So, in terms of this topic, I would say Peter's probably one of our good examples of an actuary who's succeeded at banking and been able to apply versatile skills to a wide range of areas. So I'll hand over to Peter to take us through. Peter's doing this on behalf of Peter and Nick Scott. Nick is another actuary who works at NAB, who is actually a banker. So instead of being in head office type functions, Nick actually does relationship management. And he's actually currently working in London at present in our financial institutions group. But unfortunately, he couldn't make it back from London, so Nick gives his apologies, and Peter is today's presenter. So thank you, Peter.
Thanks very much for the introduction, Phil. I'm not sure, I should probably stand forward a bit so it's actually catching me on the microphone here. So thanks very much for that, Phil. So Nick and I pulled this paper together, and a big part of that was around forming a baseline out of the information coming out of the Banking Practice Committee. So I'll talk a little bit to that. Then I'll follow up with a bit around our survey results and some of the more specific survey outcomes. The overall structure of it was basically a survey followed up with some interviews, so I'll talk a bit more to that. The real main driver of this presentation today is really to get a bit of a discussion started around actuaries in banking. So it's probably fair to say Nick and I have drawn a bit of a long bow with some of our conclusions off a very, very sparse data set. So we're interested in actually getting a few of the views from the audience and other people as well. Jumping ahead to the Banking Practice Committee, this was kind of formed and came online, I guess, towards the end of last year, which is a great and exciting thing. Its objectives are very much similar to those of the other practice committees, but it's all much more in the formative stages, so it's a really very new committee. We've kind of started out with this paper and a couple of others with the Financial Services Forum as kind of an initial chance to kind of kick off some of the discussion on the research side of things, and there's kind of a natural bent in there. There's a paper later on mortgage trends, which Phil's actually presenting, and James Hickey, I believe. And there's also one around developments in bank regulation on the capital and liquidity side later today as well. So the other piece that kind of flows in is around, I think on this slide we talk a bit about education and professional standards and those sorts of things. So the South African Institute's actually doing some stuff from that direction. We've actually been keeping linked in with them as well. So those are the main kind of pieces for the objectives. I've got our exciting membership list, so if you want to know anything more, these are the groups of people to talk to. I just want to pause and talk a bit about some of our members in there. So we've got David Bell in there as an attendee, which is obviously great given his previous association with banking and his wide and strong networks there. Steve Claxton's kind of based in Singapore, so we get a bit of that Asia perspective, which is fantastic. The link into council, of course, with all the committees happens through Lisa here, and Josh Corrigan. So we feel the relationship to the Enterprise Risk Management Practice Committees, or the Risk Management Practice Committee, I guess, is a really important one. And given that there's a lot of the concepts and regulation and direction moving in the banking side is very around that overall risk management perspective, we feel there's a lot of information and work that exists there that we can really kind of bring in and make a really valuable part of the banking committee stuff. So we have our objectives, we have our members, but the next stage is to figure out where are we at and what are we doing. So going forward. So that's really where the idea of doing the survey and some interviews came about. This is kind of the initial summary. So there's actually a good spread of actuaries around different parts of banking, which is great. There's a fair chunk in the front office, and people like Nick Scott, I guess, represent that, where they're actually working with often with insurers and spaces where actuaries actually have a bit of perspective, but from the banking product side of the world. There's a degree in the finance space, which is particularly strong in kind of the economic capital areas, and there's kind of a surprising number of actuaries involved in economic capital in banks in Australia. And credit risk is kind of a natural, is kind of the natural piece where we've actually seen a bit of the GI movement of GI actuaries into that space, which makes sense. So this kind of the pathways in there kind of highlights that around loss modelling, product management and economic capital type pieces. Just to give you a bit more background about the survey, there's around 300, just under 300 of members who kind of mark down banking as their primary practice area, so that's who the survey went out to. We got about 45 respondents coming back, so like I said, the data's pretty sparse for a survey of this nature. Going forward, the main growth areas, which we'll talk to a bit more shortly, were really around the risk-based capital type work, so the economic type space. Plenty of work there, refining understanding, broadening discussion about the different types of banks' risks beyond just kind of what's required from that regulatory perspective, and also around the internal credit models. So there's a lot going on there. And lastly, reg change has been the dominant theme in banking, as it's been in a few other places in financial services. Probably a bit of an understatement, and a bit around some of the accounting standard changes was one of the things that was brought out in the interviews as a potential opportunity there, where the standards are kind of moving from a backward-looking space to a more forward-looking and probabilistic type approach. Right, so where did actuaries come from? It's an awkward conversation with your parents, hopefully not in this case. The surprising result on the background piece was really around the number of actuaries that have been there since graduation. Anecdotally, we know there's been movement of actuaries into that space, but it's very interesting to see such a large proportion have actually spent all of their careers in that banking space. Life insurance was the next biggest number, and that kind of naturally makes sense, since with most of the major banks in Australia owning big life insurance companies, you've got that natural flow into the bank from people who want to drive their careers in a bit of a different direction. Apart from that, GI was the next biggest group. I must admit, I haven't watched these numbers against the overall institute membership, so that's probably another next step to take on this one, where we could see how much of it's just reflective. Well, you've got this many actuaries in those spaces. So where are actuaries working at the moment? This kind of digs into some of those roles we saw a bit earlier. So the big piece is around the investment banking, the finance and credit risk spaces, kind of spaces actuaries naturally gravitate to. We only had one come out on the product management side, which is kind of interesting too, because when we kind of look at the next side, when we kind of ask people, okay, that's your role, but what do you actually do, we saw it much more of a heavier response in that space, which I think links into that finance side of stuff. Finance piece. Treasury markets type risk areas showed a very strong number as well. So you actually have this quite widespread of actuaries throughout. Right. Oh, okay, sorry. Perceptions is next. I've got my slide orders out of whack. So the perceptions question was really a fairly straightforward one, just to see, did people feel their actuarial background was helping in their roles? And there was a group where there was clearly a view that actuaries have great quantitative skills, but there's clearly quite a few people out there who don't feel that being part of the actuary brand is necessarily linked into their job. So they're largely irrelevant and proven themselves through their own kind of day-to-day work was a very strong response there. So That suggests there's potentially some benefits from having a committee that can help out and focus and link actuaries together in this space. Where are we? Let's keep going. So this is the current areas, and here we see that kind of large pop, I guess, in the product management and pricing that I was referring to earlier. So there's the credit risk models and frameworks were a clear area of focus that came out. Treasury was the next kind of treasury and finance type stuff, and the treasury space links into that whole discussion between economic capital, regulatory capital, and those pieces again. And likewise, product management pricing. I'm someone who's lucky enough to kind of work in that kind of area. I know a few other actuaries who kind of work in the mortgage side of that over at NAB. So it's definitely a place where the skill set is valued, and that ability to think beyond just, okay, here's a pie chart of how your portfolio is distributed is kind of welcome. The next question we asked through was really around what areas should exist for future focus factories in banking. And this was really about digging into what sorts of things that the committee can help start shaping the conversations and driving through. So communications and influencing skills popped up at the top of the list, and this seems to be one that pops up at the top of the list a lot of the time for actuaries, which is kind of interesting in a way. We clearly don't feel that we've got this good ability to communicate, though from my mind it seems we must have it, otherwise we wouldn't still exist as a profession, probably. Credit analysis, quantitative risk measurement and modelling. So there's kind of this group of tasks around risk-type functions where it's a more technical and skills-based piece where you're working with a broader range of probably the PhD types working programming, more back-office type stuff. There's the capital markets treasury type space, which is, again, working more on an institutional side of things, understanding the nature of products in the market and the risks associated with them. And the next stage where people we felt they kind of wanted more background, which made a lot of sense to us, was the banking regulation and financial accounting. So particularly in the finance areas, accountants, unsurprisingly, are the dominant kind of force within banking, but there's plenty of work to do around understanding the nature of regulation that's come out, the language used to talk about that within banks, which is kind of developed organically since no one really knows what to call anything in this, and each bank kind of has its own interpretations going along. So there's potentially some strong space there where we can talk to members around that. The final question we asked was around what kind of future opportunities were there for actuaries in banking. So this kind of gets a bit further beyond, I guess, the development areas where we can grow to where we should focus on. And the risk management, the Basel III and regulation changes were the really dominant theme that came out of these questions. From the interviews, we actually got a bit of a broader brush. So there was a bit there around sovereign risk models, the stress testing part of the world, credit provisioning, and also around the pricing models and how those are developed for banks. So particularly on the retail side, there's a lot of data, there's a lot of information there, and you need some fairly slick pricing tools to help bankers on a day-to-day basis have that conversation with their customers. So that was another point that came out in the opportunity side. I've kind of rushed through all that at a fairly quick pace, but part of that was to get to the point where we get a bit of a discussion going and some questions and people's thoughts. So I was just going to kick off, because I probably should have started with this question, but how many people in this room actually already work in banking? I'm curious. Okay, so we've got 4 or 5 people. That's good. We'll have some useful views then.
Cool. So if you've got a question for Pete, can you give us your name beforehand? This is actually getting recorded. So we'll open up for questions. I suppose I've got one, Pete, for you. I'll lead off. Interestingly, you've asked how many people work in banking, but the other question is how many people work for a bank, potentially in an insurer. So I'm not sure if there's anybody here who works for an insurer owned by a bank. No. Okay. So, yeah, that's a big path that a lot of us have used. I know Paul, who's sitting in the front here at CBA, came in via CommInsure. I came in via the MLC brand into the NAB, and that's a big entry point for a lot of us.
Yeah, I think Tim Gorse as well was another guy, so on the MLC side, he spent some time there. So, someone I saw waving their hand.
Hi, Eric Ranson. So I didn't put my hand up, but I used to work at Bankers Trust and in the non-bank mortgage securitisation area and that sort of stuff as a treasurer. So and I used to participate in the Banking and Finance Practice Committee a long, long time ago, which I think also had the kind of general aim to somehow make actuaries feel more comfortable working in the banking area. My experience has probably been that there didn't seem to be a lot of feedback and value added. And as I said, I was on the committee for a few years, so I'm not intending to be critical of anybody. Because I guess my kind of general question was, you know, what do you think we can do to make actuaries feel more comfortable in banking, and or to support actuaries who are working in banking, and is it a good idea to try and push actuaries into banking? I mean, obviously they're big organisations and replace some of the life companies, so maybe that's the kind of incentive. But I kind of just wonder a little bit, and you've probably thought about it more recently. You know, what are we really trying to get down to?
Yep. No, that's a great question, and kind of goes back to some of those objectives and purpose. So Phil and I and Paul and others on the committee have had a bit of discussion around that sort of piece. So I'm going to put forward probably more my own personal view of how we've kind of gotten there. So there's probably two aspects there. I think the first part, in terms of getting actuaries comfortable with the idea of moving into banking, or to help them have those conversations of when they're looking for the next role and they're looking for something a bit different, is really around the language of banking. So it's one of those things. There's a whole bundle of concepts that are quite similar, that follow the same themes around how you think about risk management, how you think about control cycles, how you think about analysis, those kinds of pieces, and an actuarial way of thinking. The challenge is most actuaries are used to talking about that in a life or a GI context. I know, you throw me in a room with a bundle of GI actuaries, I've got no idea what's going on to a degree with the way the discussion happens around standards or their day-to-day kind of work. But give me a bit of time and give me a bit more context around it. So getting the language right and giving people the tools to kind of do that translation, as it were, so that when you sit down with the person on the banking side who's making the decision of in the interview of what's going on, being able to relate your existing skills and experiences in their language to them is a really valuable piece. The risk management, that also partly goes to the Risk Management Practice Committee link that I was talking to earlier as well. So it's really about, that's kind of developing some common language, and it's common language across a number of professions, not just actuaries as well. So I think that really helps. The second piece I'll talk to is more around why you actually would want an actuary in a bank, and certainly from my personal experience, it's really around the ability to understand data, understand the financial risk, have that basic knowledge of the accounting that goes on, and also understand the products involved. So you kind of end up in that, what at least in NAB we kind of call the product management intersection. So you're kind of sitting between finance over here, some risk and compliance type pieces over here, some actual interaction with what customers do and what they actually need in a third space, and able to have that conversation with the different stakeholders and bring a fairly complex bundle of requirements together in a relatively simple form to get some good things happening for the organisation. So hopefully that kind of helps out with your question. In terms of how we actually move the committee to support that, I think we're certainly still figuring that out. Phil, I don't know if you want to add anything on that one.
The one thing I'd probably add is that what caused us to re-establish this committee was the critical mass of actuaries in banking had probably grown to the stage where there was a need for it or a demand for it. So what we found was a few years ago when we opened up the designation, there'd been a lot of those guys who said, I've done it myself. You know, I quit my studies a few years ago and they'd made it themselves. And they've all sort of come back into the profession. And so we've got this critical mass of quite experienced people in relatively senior roles now too, and, you know, with good credibility that they've done it. And a lot of those individuals, you know, put their hands up and said, look, we really need to do this to push it. There's a big opportunity to do that. So I think that's a great, hopefully that gives us enough momentum and push. I think also David Bell coming on board is really good for us as well. So he will help us network at senior levels where it really does matter to help demonstrate the value. And I think, you know, sometimes unless the people at the top really get it, they're going to buy the MBAs, they're going to buy the mass PhDs or the Master of Finance. You know, there's a great opportunity for him to influence some pretty serious people here. So, you know, I'm pretty optimistic about it. You know, we're going to do our best and we're going to do it in a way that, you know, we can do things to help people join the profession too. So going into the comments Peter made about the language, there's a lot of people who are starting to talk to me now about, you know, AMP moving a lot of its actuaries up to Sydney. You know, so there's a lot of guys in Melbourne, very smart people with very good business management, capital management experience, you know, who would be very good in my organisation, who are starting to come and talk to us. But the point is they're talking about themselves as life insurance specialists. So our job is to help facilitate the language, you know, for them to demonstrate what they can really do. So, you know, that's actually quite exciting. For me to get an economic capital expert, I'd probably have to go to London and pay $250,000 to $300,000 a year and relocate the person. And that ain't an attractive proposition to me to do. So if I can get an actuary who's experienced in this locally in Melbourne, that's pretty attractive. So one of the objectives, I think, is going to be to help us mentor people into banks as well. I think that'll help. But as I said, it's early days. If we can build some bridging courses as well, that'll help. You know, what's the language, help people understand banking, help actuaries show how they can really apply their skills. I think that'll help a lot too.
And demonstrate, I guess, that they're connected with the recent changes in legislation.
Yeah.
And they're actually on top of things.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lindsay Mann. My last job was running a funds management company that was owned by a bank. I found that the point of alignment that I felt most comfortable was in the risk management area, that they had a really strong, well-organised global approach to risk management, and coming from my actuarial perspective, I was very comfortable with that, and there were no sort of real cultural issues. So I felt that was one area that if I had wanted to cross over into the banking side, it would have been relatively easy. Anyway, I'm now retired and I occasionally give career talks to students. And one of the areas I have a great difficulty to is when the issue of banking comes up. And there's practically nothing in the careers talk about it, and there's no real background material. So if it would be helpful to people like myself if you could address that by... you don't have to beef up the presentation all that much because we don't have that much time to present, but if there was more background information, a few war story type things, that when I'm talking one-to-one with someone about banking as one possibility for an actuarial career, I can just cite a few examples, like yourselves, what you've been doing. That would make it very helpful. The Institute's beefing up its talking program again, so if you could be part of that, it'd be very helpful.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Chance to get in the conversation at the start. I think the thing there too is when people often, particularly I know, or at least I know when I was at uni, I don't know if that still kind of holds true, but when you hear banking, you think more the investment banking side rather than there's actually a whole bundle of stuff going on in the commercial banks, and they're probably a bit easier to get into and to do well in to some degree as well, so particularly given all the reg change and stuff that's gone on. But yeah, definitely take that concept in there. And sorry, if you could maybe email us or myself or Phil or something with whomever in the Institute looks after that, or we'll track it down as well.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Comments, thoughts, questions? Oh, we've got two.
Hugo from RJ.
Could you just use the microphone because of the recording thing? I don't make the rules. They're just imposed upon me. Perhaps we should just be ignoring them, given the last talk we saw at the plenary.
Okay, Hugo from RGA. Very trivial questions. I think you partly on the answered it already, but for actuaries who are looking to move in a banking industry, who are we competing with? And how do you think we can distinguish ourselves?
Yep, so to me there's two types of competition within banking. There's the more professional services background type competition, so there's the people who, and this is probably more on the some of that risk management kind of space where it's more broad brush rather than pure quantitative work, so it's kind of the lawyers, the accountants, the consulting firms, the to some extent the strategy type firms is where the competition comes from. It's people who have had spent their time in professional services, got their degree of polish and have decided to move kind of more into the corporate space. The other side of it would be on the quantitative side where you kind of have CFA is probably the most common designation. You get a few of the, I think it's, I can't remember the exact name of the designation, but it's the GARP, the Global Association of Risk Professionals Group, and the PhD type. So where actuaries offer the piece that's a bit different to those groups is a lot of them are very much more, with the exception of the GARP side, but probably even that to a degree, a much more equity-focused, funds management-type focused groups rather than having a broader range of business background where you also have the GI and the life. And so you've got a kind of perhaps a more holistic view coming from an actuary would be my perspective on that competition piece.
Probably the best parallel is if you think about in an insurer, typically what you find is the actuary is the go-to person on most things. So it's interesting in our wealth division, what we see is that the appointed actuary is the go-to person on everything. Risk, you know, they're involved in capital, they're involved in a bit of this and a bit of that, and because they're seen as the person who put it all together. And I think that's the real opportunity, you know, going to what Peter said before about the understanding all the intersection of the areas. So you have the maths PhD who's, you know, really good at modelling stuff, probably not clear how it's used. You know, and then you've got the finance guy who understands capital, but it's a number, doesn't understand the drivers to why it happens. So it's putting all of that together is perhaps our niche area. You know, we'll have the ability to do quant stuff and compete with the PhDs. Masters of finance people are another area of competition. But, yeah, to me it's always been sitting in that white space area, as we call it, where, you know, the other professionals know so super specialist. It's putting it together. The parallel I always used was the guy who comes up with the really funky mortality and disability rates in the life company, but gets used by lots of consulting actuaries doing super valuations and other things. It's more putting it all together like that is where perhaps we can add the value.
Gareth Sweeney at the Commonwealth Bank. I work in an area in risk management which is kind of a bit of the juncture between the bank and the wealth management, so we deal a lot with the life insurance company and the general insurance company owned by the bank. And what we see is a lot of issues when it comes to discussing between those two areas, so it comes down to a lot of the translation that you've been talking about, the banking speak and what are their topics and the life insurance front of mind concerns. Are there any plans to, I guess, extend some of that translation and upskilling to people who are happy in, say, life insurance, but just translating that into concepts and ideas that are relevant in a banking context for, I guess it would be sort of subsidiaries of the major conglomerates?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Well, to take on board, I guess it's a broader piece that doesn't necessarily have to be for people who just purely actually want to move into the bank itself. So I can't say we had any specific plans to do that, but I think, as you say, it'll be quite an applicable piece to take across. So, yeah, sorry. Take that one. Really good idea.
Paul Nuttall, CBA, is probably more of observations rather than questions. I agree with what Phil was saying in terms of where I see actuaries can place value in the banking space. From my experience, I see that actuaries in banking are very good at understanding the whole sort of end-to-end risk, the whole of the business, the interaction between risk and capital and things like that, how economic capital and regulatory capital can fit together. And those are the sort of disciplines or abilities that you can apply to, whether it's life insurance or GI or banking. And I think that's valued. And they can also provide, as Gareth was saying, that link between the banking and the wealth management side. You see a lot in banking people saying, well, that's wealth management, I don't really understand that, or insurance, I don't really understand that, and why am I banking? So I think actuaries, therefore, have got the skills that are needed, but and they prove that because they have actually gone into banking and added value. But the thing is that they haven't really been helped. They have to do that on their own. And I think the challenge for the Institute is how can the Institute help them in that? And part of it is around language. Part of it is around sort of opening some doors and communicating and maybe trying to get into some of the banks and working out how do we increase those opportunities. So I'd be keen to know, did you get any feedback from the survey around whether people found the Institute had helped them at all, or what they're looking for the Institute to do to help them?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The Institute didn't really come up in the conversation, and I think that goes back to that really large chunk of people too that feel they've kind of needed to drive to where they are today themselves. And I think that goes back to there isn't any kind of statutory role in a bank that actually requires an actuary specifically to be there, so you don't have this kind of initial way in and of people going, well, these organisations have kind of grown up around and developed around actuaries themselves, so they end up kind of interconnected into all the pieces. But there wasn't really much comment on what the Institute offers and how it fits in. I think there's certainly, I think, recognition on the Institute side that when you've got a bundle of people that don't necessarily need the designation on their kind of day-to-day basis, there needs to be something there, and there needs to be a fairly good description of, well, why you should stay linked into the Institute. So it's a bit of a complex one, but there wasn't anything in the survey that kind of said specifically, oh, we want blah from the Institute, or we don't want X. See what happens next time around. We'll probably look at holding the survey again at some point just to refresh it, see how it's developed, see how we're going. Phil, do you have any other comments? You've probably talked with the Institute more on this stuff than I have.
Yeah, look, Paul made a good point about this. I probably remember when I first moved into banking, which was actually 8 years ago today, and I was actually doing the exam for super at the time, and I'd moved out of super into banking, and I was sort of really disappointed that I was doing all this work for the Institute and there was nothing coming back for me. So it was quite a disappointing time in my early times in banking. You know, the Institute really wasn't that interested. There was really nothing there for us. But interestingly, as time went, last few years, I would have to say the Institute's really trying really hard and reaching out and trying to help us. But over time, that'll hopefully improve as we get, you know, the influence in there. The stuff that the Institute can do, I think, is opening the doors, as Paul said. But there still are a few people that do believe that there's more the Institute could have done over the years for their career, rightly or wrongly. And they are really, really keen. I know Council last year saw this as an opportunity and were, you know, happy to accommodate us to have a practice committee to give us opportunities to do stuff. And David Bell's really excited about, you know, opening doors for us as well. So, you know, I think that's hopefully the Institute will be seen in a positive light in a few years' time in this industry.
Nina Larkin from PwC. I guess more an observation and a comment rather than a question per se. I guess the lovely thing that I've heard about what you guys have talked about today is that I guess my experience is banking is quite broad, so you've tried to kind of describe, you know, there is what people do in funds management and finance, there is what people do in credit, and I guess what I would like to see from the Banking Practice Committee and kind of doing any education sessions going forward is I've always had to educate people. Yes, I work in banking, but no, I don't do investment banking. No, but there is a lot of actuaries that do work in that space as well. So I guess I see banking as a really broad area that we all can get involved in, but we'd just love to see kind of, as we're kind of progressing, what it is that we're doing with the Banking Practice Committee to kind of make sure that
we capture
the broadness of what we can get involved in. experience.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think part of where we're trying to get that is our the committee itself is actually quite broad and does actually capture people with those different facets of banking itself. So we do have a person from Macquarie, so from the investment banking side, Nick Scott, who I did this paper with, he's actually very much on that institutional higher end scale of piece. So it's hopefully we've got a diverse enough array of roles that we're bringing that multiplicity of views into the discussion. So yeah. Please. I'm quite excited. This is probably the most questions I've seen come up. So,
Eric McNamara at Deloitte. Yeah, I worked for 3 years in MLC investment management in a pricing and product. And in my experience, what brand actually brought or what was valued, which is the confidence. So, for example, we built a new high net worth channel into NAB. To sell our products out of MLC Investment Management. And when we pitched to the executive, they brought me, just they could do it themselves, but they kind of was, here's our actuary. Like, here's the guy. You know, and I helped the pitch. And they're like really thankful. And that's what I got from it, was just they just value the confidence that they get from having an actuary and the brand actuary.
Yeah, I think Phil can probably talk to that more than I can, having been bundled up in front of the board once or twice with on the economic capital front and ICAPs and things like that. So, maybe if you want to talk about a couple of an experience you've had there, or
actually, ironically, a lot of people in my organisation don't know I'm an actuary until afterwards. So, but once, typically, what we do find in general, though, within the organisation is, most of the actuaries that have done the work there have actually done a good job, and the brand is quite strong now. So people do say, oh, they're an actuary, they know what they're doing a bit more. So, but when I go to board, I don't say, by the way, I'm an actuary, therefore you should do this. And I think that's the big thing in the bank. It's actually harder to say, I'm an actuary, therefore, you know, have the confidence in me. So it's that's still the journey we're going to have to go on, is that, you know, getting that,
there's not that natural assumption.
Yeah, getting a brand within the banks, I think, is going to happen over time. It's still probably in the individual capability stage, I think, is probably fair to say. Is that how you find Paul when you go to board and things?
Yeah.
Sorry.
What I think is people think you're an actuary, therefore you're smart, and I should listen to you. But Mike, the question is, do you understand credit risk? So if you're in the insurance space and you say, I'm an actuary, they know you understand insurance because that comes with the brand. But the big question is, do you really understand credit risk? Because actuaries typically don't. And, you know, for banking, credit risk is huge. So it's overcoming that and building up that skill, I think, that's critical for the credibility.
But it's actually quite easy to bridge that gap, I think. You know, credit risk, you know, I did insurance risk, credit risk, and you can start drawing parallels. It doesn't take long before they realise you do know, but Paul's point is exactly that. You know, straight away you do need to demonstrate in the early stages of your career to these people that you do know this stuff. Because they do assume you're smart, but do you have the knowledge that they actually are looking for?
Great. Anyone else? Awesome. You want to pop them again?
So, Eric McNamara, Deloitte again. I just... to that point, in my experience, what happened was certainly I didn't go, I'm an actuary, and try and sell that hard initially. It was about getting a few runs on the board where people asked for things. Like, the work I did from a technical point of view was really simple for an actuary, right? So it wasn't about that. But got a few extra runs on the board, and then one of the general managers of investment asked me to do a pet project with him, did that, and then people start to get your name, and then they come to you. And then brand actuary becomes alive.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Certainly, I think if we went in, certainly in the investment management unit, which is similar to the bank, if you try to sell yourself too hard, I think you get resistance. And you might scare a few people as well, I think, because, you know, they know you're technically really smart, but they'll have other skills that maybe not all actuaries have. And, if, you know, you need to sort of get their respect first, and then they'll come, I think, and ask you to help in all sorts of areas. That was just my experience.
Yeah, there's a degree of humility you need to kind of bring into your interactions. I think within the bank and the range of professionals that's there, as I'm sure there is when you're in an insurance type environment.
It was an interesting example, though. Actually, you don't have to do the really complicated super duper technical models to impress people, because they are actually relatively simple businesses that have run, you know, with very simple analytics and very simple, you know, constructs over many years, and it is actually quite easy to impress a lot of people, as Eric had said. Mm-hmm. So I've seen that from all the guys. What would you say to that, Pete?
Yeah, no, I'd definitely agree. The hard part of my job is not the technical stuff, by and large. It's my pure kind of technical actuarial skills crop up maybe once a year when I need to deal with like an odd derivative or something like that. It's a pretty rare event. It's more the rigor of thinking and the control cycle type work that's the valuable piece that comes in on the day-to-day, that and just working with people and influencing people.
Alrighty. Look, I'll just quickly, I just heard the bell ringing. Apparently that means something, that it's winding up in 5 minutes. I just want to remind a few people, there's a last chance to get a Twitter prize. So apparently there's a, you have to use a hashtag 2014 FSF. I'm not a Twitter user, so I have to assume that there's a few guys of Pete, more like Pete's age, you know how to use Twitter and that.
I'm
so
still figuring it out.
So look, if there's any other questions, I'd encourage people to, you know, talk to Pete afterwards. Pete's just to give another bit of a plug for Pete. Pete is actually the communications guy or officer or person on the banking practice committee. So a big part of Pete's role will be doing some of the external looking. So that was really good to hear that opportunity for the education. We're wanting to organise some insight sessions at a later stage, so Pete's going to be involved in doing some of that. So, you know, if people were interested in talking about promoting banking and actuaries in banking, you know, ring any of the people on the committee that were in the presentation. But Pete's our sort of public face, I think, is probably the word to use. Thanks, Pete. That was a good presentation. So I know people would like to thank Pete, but there was something here for you, mate.
Yeah. So, just leaving random bottles of wines and runes now.
So, thank you, Peter.
Thank you.